So we're actually changing the wiring in our band. I remember reading something similar where people who play a lot of first-person shooters are much better at picking out individuals when they first walk into a room. You're so used to just glancing around
and registering. Totally makes sense.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Willow.
Hi, Willow and Krista.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Hello. Does anyone want to go around and introduce themselves?
I'm Steve.
Steve.
Cameron.
Kyle.
Kyle, hi. I'm Abby.
Hi, Abby.
Rob.
Hi, Ben.
So what did the article have to say about it? Just that...
It was not that... That particular case was not a matter of chemistry, just for lack of a better term, I don't remember the technical term, the wiring, the software of the brain, how it, pathways that were used more often were reinforced and those that were used less often than people who interact in more traditional ways.
Interesting.
And the result is a difference in the way that the brain operates from the software point of view. Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much of that is a factor of just the fact that they play those games, but also when they start to play those games. Because there are distinct points in your life when your brain goes through an actual, you know, developmental cycle, a pretty significant one. And if you're, and things you're doing and making yourself do at those times are going to have a very significant impact on, you know, how your brain develops going forward.
Yeah, this is definitely with young, very young kids.
Which makes, you know, that type of a phenomenon not particularly surprising.
Well, yeah.
But I'd be curious to find out, you know, if you see any similar kinds of behavior on, you know, old farts like me.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of it are just behaviors that you learn and patterns, and that will, of course, shape the way you think. But did they mention anything about how it's actually changing the structure of the brain, or was that the
refutal? It's actually pretty big.
Okay. I know there was someone who came back with a rebuttal, which was like, you don't know what you're talking about, you're just making things up to make people scared.
Which it usually sounds like people do those articles.
Yeah. But I think we are... part of the conversation we were having on Whitechapel, I'm not sure if you popped in on that, was...
I didn't see it, no.
Where people are concerned because we are going back to not multitasking, it's impossible to actually multitask, but concentrating a whole lot of little things at once instead of one focal point, and how it's seen as this really bad thing in funny ears. Because we should be concentrating on the one book that we're reading, and we should be concentrating on talking to the one person that's in front of us, and we should be, you know, just doing one task with incredible concentration, because that's what we've been doing for hundreds of years. Well, for thousands of years, we were running around on the plains, you know, trying to keep track of if there are any predators, and where, if there were any dangers coming up ahead of us, and if there was any food around, and what time of day it was, and where everybody around us was, and that's much more our natural state to keep track of a whole lot of things.
Well, this is where an article that you and I were talking about comes into play. I was reading, I've read several articles about the brain recently, not related to this, but one of them was talking about, well, basically how humans evolve. I think it was in Discover magazine. And asking the question, are we still evolving, are we not still evolving? And, you know, it's kind of been taboo over the last 50 years to suggest that we might still be. The idea has been that, you know, humans aren't changing that much, but what these people
because
are doing...
Because we're perfect.
We're looking at... That's a threat of various religious groups possibly trying to stomp down.
At
new traits that have emerged in particular branches of human migration. I assume you've all seen the map of starting in Africa and then spreading out, how they've traced genetically where groups went and how they went out, like blue eyes appearing unexpectedly and so forth. And what they discovered was that part of the farthest branch, the longest migration, and I don't remember the exact name of the gene, but that that they developed a gene which is... has at least a strong, some kind of strong link, whether it's causal or not, to ADD and ADHD. And they're theorizing that the advantages conferred by that gene, being able to multitask, being able to concentrate on many things at once, were a huge survival benefit for groups that were in constant migration over a long period of time, because you're having to pay attention to more aspects of your environment at once because it's not controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm bringing that up for several reasons. First of all, just to throw it out there on the table, but also as we're talking about how the brain is changing, to say that there may be some macro effects taking place as well,
mm-hmm.
And that they're not necessarily universal to humans, but that they're based within particular groups, which again starts to get into some very, very sticky territory.
Especially when we think about there's such an overlap from what you're bringing up between genetics and brain function, which makes complete sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's possible just to concentrate on brains without bringing in all that other information. The first conversation I ever had with Gregory Rollins, that I talk about him a fair amount, I bring him up, he was my mentor in college. He, one of the original theorists in computer information and programming languages and how you go about, came up with the theory of the cow and the infinite fence. If you have a cow and you have a fence that's infinite and there's a gate somewhere in it, what's the most efficient way to for the cow to find the gate? And so the pattern of that and stuff like that. But the first conversation I ever had with him was about how some of the people see ADHD as a mental illness or something to be medicated, when it really helps you out in today's environment.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still the older generation is still trying to medicate the younger generation, even though the younger generation is adapting, or maybe not even adapting, but reverting to a better brain set.
Wouldn't really necessarily call it better in some cases, but
more suitable to the environment.
Yeah, it's more suited to certain environments than others, yeah.
So, I don't know much about... My brain is so fried. not the best conversation right now. That's okay. So our brains are really elastic and we're really good at picking things up. I think one of the articles was about how we're learning... We're getting really good at visual processing and taking things in visually and kind of analyzing them and then putting them together, but we're losing our analytical thinking. Which I think ties into the "is Google making us dumber" idea. Did you actually leave Watchmen?
Yeah, I could listen to you all day. Sorry, I hate soundtracks that lead you around by the nose.
Yeah, okay. Well, that was very bad.
And that's my pet peeve with movies. So.
Okay. What was I saying? I got distracted.
Elasticity.
Yes.
Using analytical skills.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, so we're losing our analytical skills, according to this article, or the slight amount that I actually read of it. But that brings us to the "is Google making us dumber" conversation that Colleen and I had a long time ago, and that we also talked about in one of our first meetings of information diets. But if we're losing our analytical sense, but we're still thinking about it as more of groupthink instead of individuals, is that okay?
Distributed intelligence?
Yeah.
The way I'm thinking about it is that we're storing part of our brain function outside of our body, but we're still reliably able to access those particular functions. We know how to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like rejecting the... If anything, I'd say we're becoming more specialized in particular areas while gaining a general ability to pull from other areas. And that specialization, within that, we're going... At least what I see working with people who have specialized is an intense ability to focus and to analyze and to solve problems related to that. But that's coupled with the ability to solve general problems using these external resources in ways that were never available to them so instantly before.
Like
so you can't go where you might go to the library before, and you'd have to put in a lot of effort, and people would see that effort as making, as being a sign of worthiness for you to have achieved this knowledge, now you can find it almost instantly. So does that mean that you're less able to analyze and to solve problems? No, it means you're solving them differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're utilizing the power of a crowd to solve those problems, mm-hmm. instead of the power of a card catalog.
It seems like you'd have not completely different, but a large difference in the actual brain that's approaching those problems. Like, you'd be able to bring, for example, more emotion into your problem solving, perhaps, or something along those lines. Some type of, like, if you were to learn how to do something with the library, for example, the way you would solve your problems with that knowledge will be different, as you said, than if you research it with a Google or a reference, basically a universal reference. So will your brain be bringing more of something else? And the reason I bring that up is because I've noticed that happens in forums, is that in a forum, it's like facts are almost useless. It seems like that because they're so easy to get, and it seems like there's a lot more emotion or something else behind what is sort of drawing people towards that, and maybe that's a change, I don't know.
So what you're saying is that people have more cognitive and otherwise resources to devote to what they're going into, as opposed to spending so much time and energy fact gathering?
Well, I just said that the cognitive resources, there's different cognitive resources that are at play that may have nothing to do with the practical task at hand.
Or that it's easier to grab surface level facts that support a hypothesis without seeking out whether or not they're accurate, and the culture of most forums is not generally directed toward the practice of citation.
I think there's a couple of questions. There's what's advantageous and what's socially deemed as necessary to, you know, interact with a group. And socially, you can be this light butterfly level flitting across the surface of logic creature that, you know, goes to a lot of forums and has a lot of opinions. Or you can go really in depth and have a deep analysis that's cross-linked and multi-threaded, and it's wonderful. And there's a lot more wiggle room, and so there are more people who are butterflies, but there are also a lot more people who maybe wouldn't have the opportunity to be analytical otherwise that are now finding people to converse with about the things that they're really passionate about.
Yeah.
However, I still think that some of the really classic ways of being intelligent where you're applying analysis to new ideas are just as effective, and that just because we see a lot of butterflies doesn't mean that they're winning.
Because they're butterflies.
Right.
Well,
they're getting their memes out.
We can see more of the butterflies than we could before.
Yeah.
But there are also some, I don't mean to like throw a bunch of random here, but topical. There are some new ways of being intelligent that I don't think were advantageous before. It's really insane what the new waiting is.
Yeah.
And that there's value in old ways of being intelligent as well. You're going to get a different kind of quality of information from using the card catalog at the library.
Mm-hmm. Because you have the serendipity of stumbling on other things that are associated with it.
There's a question of serendipity, which I think is worth investigating quite a bit more. There's also the issue that we're sort of in a transition time. We have not achieved the one book yet.
Encyclopedia
and Galactica. Right. So, and a huge amount of human knowledge is still siloed in libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And cultural traditions.
It's something that you brought up earlier about sort of the transfer of intelligence from people to groups. Is very interesting to me because it seems like we have a long, illustrious tradition of sort of valorizing individual intelligence and individual effort, and, you know, these great pioneers of science and these great writers and everyone who we sort of reveal
and
as
we
cultural icons.
Ignore the thousands of people that led up
right.
to them. Yeah.
So So I wonder how that's going to change the culture. I mean, I think it already has tremendously in terms of seeing, you know, remixing emerge as, you know, a viable form of making music and all sorts of different ways of drawing from other sources. And I think that's seen as being much more, I mean, it's gaining acceptability.
I think that's part of it, is just being able to accept the fact that we're not closed off individuals anymore. I mean, we've been writing about No Man as an Island for a really long time, but I don't think it registered in the same way that it does now, or that it was as apparent as it is now. In Bloomington, we talked about how porous we're becoming when we were talking about sexuality, and how we're losing the idea of I. And more when I read about group consciousness and how we all communicate and emergent leadership and even just the way that ants work and everything, it's sometimes compared to the way that when you say, well, where is a thought? I've also been listening to a lot of Radiolab. You say, where is a thought? You know, you can find the thought patterns and the electricity that's going on between the synapses in your brain, but no one of those is a thought. It's the group of them. And it's sometimes compared to the way that we've started communicating, where it's not one person that's doing the idea or conveying the idea. It's a group of people that are coming up with, through interacting with each other, that are coming up with something new and then presenting it together or through a mouthpiece.
So, I guess a question would be, how well does the idea of intelligence work when you move up a level? When you go from one person's brain that's a system of neurons to a group of people, is there still... I don't think we have the same logic engine. It's different.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like Willow made me read Here Comes Everybody.
And which I haven't even been able to finish yet.
I really feel like I ought to interject a concept into this discussion, but it's going to take me a couple minutes.
Okay.
Have any of you had a chance to read that?
No.
This is going to sound familiar to you. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about something called a power law distribution, and it is a graph that looks like this. And if this looks, this is the picture of the long tail in marketing.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the picture of how people contribute to Wikipedia articles. You have a few people who contribute the bulk of the content, a massive amount, and a few people who are semi-engaged, and then a massive crowd who stops by, contributes one or two pieces, and then moves on. But, so individually, someone comes in and corrects grammar, not a big deal.
Yeah.
But the combined weight of the work that crowd does radically enhances the article, because someone might stop by with a piece of knowledge that the specialist doesn't have but that is still relevant, and it enhances, it creates cross-links, it creates knowledge. So as you're talking about moderating group behavior, one way to look at that and how it's occurred, kind of over, this should also look like Moore's Law.
Mm-hmm.
One way that we've kind of seen this pattern occur over and over again is where group behavior occurs, but you still, in a specific area, are likely to have a small number of very passionate, committed individuals who are managing and guiding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that they can overpower the crowd, but that the crowd essentially recognizes and supports and enhances their work and calls them on it when they're wrong. But as you talk about specialization as well, you kind of get the same thing, where you in particular might specialize in a particular area, and then in the past your available knowledge and resources would have made it about to here.
Yeah.
Now you have access to all those other pieces when you become a member of the tribe.
Yeah.
Like what's happening with democracy is we're able to have more networked voter systems.
and more, and the cost of communication has been lowered so radically. And the cost of organization. And that is making extraordinary changes in transparency and in what information is out there and in what misinformation is out there.
I'm amazed at, and I've caught myself doing this, where I won't necessarily check the validity of something before I pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's happened in a few situations where I was actually embarrassed about it, and so I've gotten much better about it. Or I won't pass it on until I've had a chance to check it. But I like the idea of, we're getting way off track. Let's throw the topic out the window because it's too narrow and my brain is not working well.
Something you were saying, though, sort of leads well into something I was considering, too, which ties sort of into our initial concept, which was, you know, the rewiring of our brains based on thinking and all that. And based on some other folks here have been saying, I wonder how much, because of all the technology we have around us, the effect of Google and all that, how we've all grown up in this environment, we've rewired our brains to be less focused on the storage of information, but to be basically virtual pointers to knowledge of locations of information.
Mm-hmm.
And what is sort of morbidly interesting to me would be, what would be the effect if there was some sort of huge cataclysm and the net went away? And in the short term, you know, I think a lot of us would be completely 100% screwed, because all the places we knew to look for all the things that we know were now gone.
Really?
But then over time, it would be interesting to see if this is sort of a confirmation of the effect as the younger generation then evolved to learn how to do it again for themselves the old way, where they, you know, now I know how to find the information and keep it up here and not have to worry about finding it elsewhere.
Yeah,
I have to say that my first response to that would be sort of a withdrawal response. I would run like hell to the nearest chopping mall and start just yelling out questions to passersby.
Who knows this? Who knows this? But a lot of people would be in the same boat. I don't know. I could tell you, but it's gone.
What I'm trying to say is that it's a meme, the idea that you can get information from the masses just by throwing a question out and getting it back, that doesn't have to go away when the internet does.
But the thing is, we don't rely on so much on the individual storage of it, but that we've all placed it in places that are permanently stored outside of our heads.
This may be a reason as well that I suspect almost everyone in this room has books on their shelves full of information about how to do tons of basic things.
And a lot of those things, I couldn't necessarily spout out to you right now, oh, and here's how you do this, but I got this book.
Right.
Well, actually,
I mean, there's some
how long ago was it that the way that I go figure out something is I go grab that book off the shelf. It's the same thing as Googling something now. I mean, there's really very little difference.
Sure, but we each individually have personally access
to far less
of those books.
In effect, we have a better knowledge. We have a better personal library.
Yeah, the question is this a rewiring of how we process, or is this a rewiring of something? Is this are we rewiring patterns in the brain, or are we changing how we socialize, or is there?
The rewiring would have happened with the invention of printing press, the availability of books.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sort of would have started a long time ago.
Yeah, knowing what page something's on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I always argued in school against just tests about rote memorization, because it doesn't help you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even knowing how to do something because you've memorized the steps to go through doesn't help you actually do it. It's the whole idea of...
It can make you sound smart, but...
Right, and it's the idea of theory versus practice. And I think that because we have access to all of this information and we're actually going and seeking it and then utilizing it, I think that if the internet went away suddenly, we would have a much better skill in dealing with it than people 20 years ago would have in interacting with their world and each other, because I think that we have more openness to meeting new people and being okay with asking someone else for help, which in my family, with their pride issues, you did not do. You researched it on your own in a dark room until you figured it out, and you didn't go and do it until you could do it perfectly, and I still have issues with that, but that's okay. I'm getting better at asking the people around me how to do something. And so I don't necessarily feel that I think having the knowledge stored somewhere else is a good thing. That's why I argued against, again, with the rote memorization testing in school. If you give me an open book, that's real life. If I can reference something else, it matters if I know where to look, how to transfer that information. That's my feedback on that.
Also, I think somebody considers that we're all very young. I mean, none of us are 60 yet, and I think by that time you have very rigid things in your brain, and in the lifetime of researching Wikipedia, I'd like to see what you can remember at that point without having to force yourself to memorize things.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying, theory versus practice, and I just imagined older folks tend to sort of dominate theory with younger people giving a little bit of inputs, but...
That's interesting you bring up, and that's kind of goes back to what Penny was saying about being a butterfly and just sort of flitting over information, whereas before you would sort of pore over texts and sort of try to gain expertise because the resources for gaining knowledge were sort of limited and you had to focus on isolated things. Now, with the capability to just grab different facts, like you can, one moment, you can be searching for something. You know, you can just look at completely different things at the same time. You can have tabs open looking at 50s musicals and, you know, the chemical structure of different compounds and
mm-hmm.
all sorts of different stuff. And I wonder how, if we're going to get better at sort of retaining disparate information, and like was mentioned with the ADD, if our brains are going to become better at assimilating information that comes at us quickly and that we have brief exposure to.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
I think the thing with that is classifying the information and making it easier to reference later. I love Delicious Library. I love Delicious Tags, where you can tag a web page with a bunch of different stuff instead of just bookmarking it with one thing. And so when someone sends me a website and it's a lot of information that I can't process right then, but I'm at work and I know that if I close the browser, I'm going to lose it forever and I won't be able to find it ever again, but it's so cool. I'll either email it to myself, which is the obvious choice, or bookmark it. I mean, Delicious. And because that's also publicly available, it's easier for other people to find it too.
So it might not be, as we've already said, it might not even be necessary to gain those skills, but I wonder if that'll be a byproduct. Because we have, we can, you know, bookmark it and go back to it later, and it's sort of, it's there. We don't have to, you know, go back to the physical library and go to the reference section. We can access it any time.
Well, you can do that too, because it's like going to two different libraries that have a different set of books. You go to one library and you go through their catalog and figure out all the things that you can research there, and then if you go to a library in a different country with a different set of books, you're going to get a completely different set of knowledge. And everything that's on the internet is not in books, and vice versa. So.
One thing that I think is a saving grace of the internet, even if it does turn out to be a giant cluster, you know what, and, you know, doesn't actually help anybody study anything, is that there's a lot of meta knowledge out there on how to learn, how to study, how to think rationally, how to solve problems that's very generic. And so one of the things I've been teaching myself is how to learn really technical things. And there's a lot of meta information out there on, you know, you can do this, you can do that. And it's not necessarily going to be an intuitive interface where the easiest thing to do is the best thing, because that's never really the case. I mean, you can try to learn a martial art and the easiest thing to do is rarely the best thing. And I think it's the same thing with learning over the internet. But at the same time, there are strategies and now they're there, and so you don't have to just fumble.
Yeah.
That's a phenomenon. Oh, sorry. You changed it. I was going to say that's a phenomenon that I'm interested in, is the void of context.
The void of context?
Well, it's like when the conversation ceases for a moment in any setting, there's like that opening, like
doors or whatever.
Yes.
I was just thinking about, in terms of brain plasticity, the generation of kids who are growing up now and who are born, say, you know, like in 2000 and after, who are, they haven't known life without Wikipedia and without the kind of connectivity that we have now. And I'm really fascinated to see how that influences the way social interaction happens in schools and the way that kids construct their world, the way they build friendships and the way they do everything, the way it affects their, you know, test scores that have been built with standardized models from another time. And I think it'll be really fascinating. I don't know. I mean, I imagine that there'll be a lot of manifestations in pretty much every area of life. But
I hope our schools adapt. They've never been very good at doing that for anything.
If they don't, the kids will.
Sure. Yeah. Something that I went to I don't know if I've mentioned this to anyone, but there was a little talk at my school about these tablet PCs that they're using. They got a grant from HP to use tablet PCs, and they're using them in chemistry classrooms, and they allow the teacher to interface in real time with people with small groups that are working with a laptop, so they can see really complex simulations that they wouldn't be able to do the actual experiments, and they can see them happening in real time, and the teacher can see what's happening on everyone's PC, so they can tell what they're doing, and they can write them little notes that come up in chat boxes. So that's one way that I think it's adapting very well, and that's still not being broadly implemented, but they have said that students respond really well to it. At first it's weird, but then they, because they're all sort of, you know, they didn't grow up with that sort of thing, but it's becoming, they find it a really valuable tool for being able to get immediate feedback and see things happen in real time and not have to rely on a pen and paper and having the teacher come around and look. And I think that could be a really powerful paradigm for education. And I used to be kind of squeamish about the idea of computers in classrooms. Kyle was talking about how he thinks, or at one point he mentioned that he thought that people should be allowed to have laptops and to access the internet during testing. And I was totally allergic to that idea because I thought, you know, that doesn't actually test your knowledge. But I think the type of knowledge that we value that's stored internally as opposed to externally, I think that's going to sort of lose value. And
yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at earlier, is we're becoming, our brains are beginning to store pointers as opposed to actual data.
So there'll be a lot more emphasis, I think, on sifting and learning to navigate.
And learning to analyze the data you're seeing in front of you to find out what's worthwhile and what's not.
Right.
Well, how strong is the old paradigm then of, if you have this memory stored within, or these knowledge stored in your brain, will that give you a better conceptual ability to deal with the problems that are relevant towards that knowledge?
I think
or
that happens
to do the pointers, I mean, if you were to compare the two systems competing for the same project, like an expert versus a kid who uses Wikipedia or somebody, I mean, like, just an experiment.
I want to throw out there that there are different ways of applying knowledge, and some of them just require the brain. Some of them require practice in order to be good at them. You can read on Wikipedia how to play the violin. That doesn't mean that you're going to turn into a world-class violinist from studying Wikipedia. You're going to get that from human guidance. You're going to get that from practice. You're going to get that from building skills and getting yourself over hump after hump after hump until you know how to do that. So, I mean, that's without discussing that type of knowledge as well, I think we're kind of missing a really key area.
I think the thing about testing and knowing if, well, doing a task and if the things involved with it are already in your brain, it depends on how they got there. There's a difference between knowing and understanding. If you know something, you've gone through, and maybe it's rote, maybe it's just in theory, and you understand it that way. But if you've actually done something and experienced it, not only are you able to answer the question that's in front of you, you can figure out something that you didn't know you were going to be asked. Because you understand the process that's going on. Which, yeah, you can get from Wikipedia. But you can't necessarily get it from a book either.
Yeah, I mean, just because we're storing different, you know, we may not be storing the information itself directly in our brains as much anymore. That doesn't change the fact that parts of our brain get used for skills, as he's talking about, you know, whether they're physical skills or mental skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having an analytical mind has less to do with, you know, whether you know the information intuitively in your head or whether you have to look up the various bits and pieces of information online.
Mm-hmm.
You still at some point have to take that information regardless of where it came from and put the pieces together and figure out how it's relevant.
Yeah.
Can I tack on that?
Yeah.
Just, if we're talking about analysis, one of the most powerful things that analysis lets you do is abstraction, because you can only have so many chunks in at a time, and if you go in and dive in deep, you can hold the same number of chunks, but they're bigger. Like, instead of having a pointer to this and this and this and this and this, and oh god, I have to remember everything, you're holding a pointer to this large concept that I've kind of got in depth.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that the internet did was about your topic, learning and muscle memory and the things that you just have to do. It can still give you a feedback system. Like, I learned how to play flute.
Mm-hmm.
Very bad technique. But I practiced very diligently. I was very diligently awful for 3 years, and the last 2 years were undoing the first three. And had I the internet and a few good YouTube videos of somebody doing things that they ought to be doing, problem done.
Mm-hmm.
So I think our self-correction and our abstraction are getting better.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of ties back into the idea that Rob brought up in the beginning, where it was the article with the whole kids' brains getting rewired by playing video games. And that same idea that rote process can still shape what you're thinking about. And then I think that also falls back into... Crap, where was it going with that? It falls kind of... Damn it.
It's okay.
Yeah, completely lost my train of thought there.
I understand.
Yeah.
Here's I don't know if this is where you were going, but learning those skills with something frivolous like video games will later in life help a child to adapt. Those same skills are useful in business or in other endeavors that might make one more able to have more kids and pass that
hopefully
affinity for the electronic communication model.
I have a good friend who has a 3-year-old son whose grandmother lets him play video games, lots of video games, and he loves them. And she's taken to really working with his hands because she's concerned that he's developing fine motor skills only with his thumbs instead of with the rest of his hands. So there are... Because he's not using the big fancy controllers that use all the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's 3.
I could make a really
important... Well, at 3 years old, that's
right
important.
Now,
it is. It's highly important. But, you know, there's a tie-in with even the simple kinds of tasks that we take for granted and how they affect the development of our brain.
Mm-hmm.
Well... Say you know this, you know how to move your finger. What happens when you can associate so much with that? Those neural signals are connected with more than just the mechanical operation of moving your finger like that, but that's like a mouse click. And how much does that go into your brain to other topics? Like, that's what you're getting at. It's like, we know that there's these changes in structures associated with things because of our technology, but what are they and what could they lead to?
Later this year, there's going to be a $400 device on the market that allows you to control your computer with your brain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This year.
That's
winter.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Is it more than just cursor up, cursor down?
What I read
from what I've seen, yeah.
This is the one
or final
after two. The...
It's a little bit. It's not the really fancy ones. It's not like monkeys grabbing a banana with a mechanical arm just using their brain.
Yeah. It's...
But what I was wondering about looking at that is saying, what would it be like for a kid who did grow up with a system, even simple as up, down, left, right, pick a letter as it flashes past,
mm-hmm.
How quickly... can you train your brain to process that if that's how you process and communicate information?
I've often wondered about that because when they talk about the processing power of computers and how fast they're getting and how much faster than the brain they are, we just have so many more connections in the brain, and that's why our brains are still better, theoretically. I don't think our environment has pushed our brains to its limit, you know? I wonder how fast they can go if we're doing a whole lot of stuff. And I have times when my brain is going way faster than I am. I can't keep up with it all the time.
Well, look at first-person shooters, people who are really good at them. You watch someone who's an expert with Half-Life or whatever, and I sit there and wonder, how are they processing that much data that quickly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's stunning, the degree of control and awareness.
Yeah.
Control, yes.
Limited
not environment. Necessarily. Well, I mean, you can do things without thinking about it.
Right, yes.
Automaticity.
Well, but there's the whole thing about people being able to, like, for the first-person shooter thing, I've seen people, like, being able to get someone across the map by just seeing a couple pixels pop out of the right area. That's a lot of awareness, but that's also, I guess, that's knowing the fake environment, I guess.
Yeah. I guess it just meant a different kind of awareness.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Still only X amount above their radar.
Yeah, true.
It's, I've played first-person shooters games a lot, and as far as the game where the part where you're attacking the other person or whatever, it seems like driving a car, like,
mm-hmm.
You can be like falling asleep instead of doing it, or like reading a book at the same time. Literally, I've like been reading and then been able to like go right then,
mm-hmm.
right like out of the corner of my eye, see something happen and like deal with that, and then go back to reading or something, or drawing a picture or something like that. And
I hope you don't do that while you're talking.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
I hope you don't do that.
No, not anymore.
Musical instruments, that's the one.
Oh, yeah. Well.
What roads do you drive on?
I live in Kingston.
Yeah, my primary vehicle is a motorcycle, so yeah.
I think those games, the limited environment, it's like you really get a good sense of like the transformational image of the like map that the game is on. You know from a position what every other in the 360 degrees what it all looks like, so you can recognize it with nothing on it, and then if there's just one pixel you can make it out, and you gotta realize how many pixels you're dealing with. It's not that many. And
it reminds me of
I was just gonna say, if you were to add dynamics into it, like not just like static dynamics that you're like, oh, there's that fake dust cloud that blows every 10 seconds or whatever, but
yeah.
Real dynamics, I bet the skills of people would go down a lot. Like,
yeah.
If there are real visual impairments. Or
yeah, because a lot of that boils down to, at its core, you know, pattern recognition.
Exactly,
That's, you know, that's really, really all it boils down to.
That's what I was going to bring up, just with songs. So my brother has this mixed CD, and I was driving in his van, and one of them is the English version of a song, and the other one is the French version, and they're almost exactly the same. There's just one, I don't even know what it is. I just could tell from the beginning, even though they're almost exactly the same, and I didn't know what track number each one was, and the French version came on, and Baron hadn't heard that yet, and I was like, oh, this is the French one. How can you tell? Like, cause it.
I can name that tune in three notes.
Exactly. So, a lot of it is pattern recognition, and I think that we've gotten really good at that because of. Well, I mean, we've always been good at it, but.
We're honing it.
We're honing it, but also because so much of our environment is constructed, it's much easier to pick out something that
different and
yeah.
Yeah, something against the grain.
Something it doesn't.
So kind of like listening to a lot of electronic music doesn't necessarily help you when it comes to noise music any more than a first-person shooter will help you in the chorus.
Right.
I've noticed differently. Wait, what were you saying?
Oh, just that you can get good at. There's like this very mathematical part of your. At least my brain that turns on when I'm listening to music because you get.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily port over when I'm listening to noise or to just ambient.
But I think you're still trying to pick it out.
Yeah.
And you might be more prone to picking it out because you're so used to having it there. So.
Yes, it would
it makes you better by being like a training ground.
Yeah, so when I think before you came in, we were talking about how people that play a lot of first-person shooters are better at picking out individuals when they first walk into a room. If you know who you're looking for, you can find them faster if you play a lot of video games. Just because that's what you're...
Because you're trying to get that one guy that got you last time when you walk in. Yeah.
He's not getting the appetizers first this time.
So even in nature, we're good at picking out human shapes. I think I sent you something on that, the techniques of being sneaky. And how if you look at images of people in wilderness settings, they're really easy to spot. Even if they're wearing all green and they have green face paint on, you can still pick out the face. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to...
Well, we're really good at that, just in general, yeah.
Yeah, so you have to, you know one ever looks up. You do the lines that break up your face, like the actual appearance of the face. I always wondered about that in a Rambo movie. I actually never seen Rambo, but similar movies involving men being muddy out of, I don't know, in the jungle or something, but... How they never painted their entire face, they would just do a few lines. I'm like, well, why don't they just, you know, paint the whole thing while they're at it? And it's because if you paint all of it, it's easy to pick out the face again. You have to break up the...
Yeah, you break up the pattern. They did the same thing in World War One on battleships. They would, the stripe patterns, that's what they would do. It was to basically kind of make it look like the wave patterns. So, like, if a U-boat saw it, you couldn't distinguish the boat. Didn't work at all, but still, it made people feel safer.
Nice. There's actually someone in that chair.
Oh, okay.